This is Twit.
Continuing on, let's talk crack.
So, okay. We've discussed over the years Wi-Fi details, Wi-Fi crypto extensively. But I need to do a little bit of a review because there haven't been any like horrific problems. I mean, remember, Leo, back in the beginning of the podcast, I mean, there was stuff happening. WEP. And oh, my goodness. WEP. And TKIP and RC4 and all these problems.
That's what's so terrifying about this, because we had settled for 5 or 6 years now on the simple recommendation. You don't need to do anything else. Just use WPA. To PSK, and your network secure.
Yes, actually, since it's been 12 years since
that
2005.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we just all gotten kind of happy.
Yeah.
So I have to lay a little bit of foundation for people to understand the nature of why what's happened is a problem. In cryptography, there are two broad categories of ciphers. There are block ciphers and stream ciphers. In a block cipher, which is, for example, what you use if you're going to encrypt your hard drive, the cipher algorithm itself, like AES, is itself a block cipher. And if in case of AES, it uses 128 bits, which is 16 bytes. And so that divides evenly into the size of a sector, and everybody's happy because everything kind of works right. Communications like Wi-Fi use stream ciphers. And stream ciphers and the ones that are used with Wi-Fi use this magic XOR, which is really kind of cool the way it works. And we've often talked about both the power and the danger of exclusive OR. The way to think of XOR is that it's the difference between two bits. So if the two bits are zero, well, they're the same. So the XOR is zero. If they're both ones, again, they're the same, so the XOR is zero. But if they're different, if the two bits are different, if it's zero and one or one and zero, then the XOR of those two bits is one. So think of XOR as the difference between the two inputs. And I'll just say briefly that's the whole secret of RAID 5. That's the way RAID 5 works. If you have two drives and you want to be protected against either of them failing, you add a third drive, which is the XOR of the first two. That is, it's the difference between those first two drives. And so as data is written to either of these two drives, the third drive is kept synchronized. It's always kept updated to be the difference between the first two drives. Now, if the third drive, that one, were to die, well, who cares? You know, it's like, okay, go get another one. You just lost your difference drive, but it doesn't matter because you've still got your first two. But if either one of the first two dies, think about it. You can figure out what the other drive of that first pair was by comparing the surviving drive to the difference drive, to the XOR drive. And that allows you to compute the entire contents of the drive that died. That's how RAID 5 works. So anyway, that just something as simple as this XOR operation is very powerful. And the other thing that we've talked about in the past when we've talked about stream ciphers is something very counterintuitive. If you took plain text, just a plain text stream of bits that is readable and it's clear for everybody to see, and you XOR that stream with noise, with randomness, the output is the best encryption in the world, which is like, what? Is that simple? Yes. Because XORing with random noise, it randomly inverts bits of the stream. And there's no way to know from the output which bits were inverted. And so that's what's sort of difficult conceptually to like believe. It's like, well, if you just flipped a few the right bits back, then you'd have the original plain text. It's like, yes, but you don't know which bits. And so it's weird that taking plain text and just XORing it with a random stream of bits is unbreakable. It's really strong crypto. And here's the key when it comes to Wi-Fi, because that's what Wi-Fi does, is it simply generates a pseudo-random bit stream and XORs the data that's being sent. And then the other end generates the identical pseudo-random bit stream and XORs what's received, which recovers the plain text. And that works. Now, there are some requirements, though, for security, because powerful as this XORing plain text with something pseudo-random is, you can kind of get a sense for the danger. In the same way that the RAID drive was like a lost drive was recoverable, there is a danger if you know what the plain text was and you can see what the encrypted data is, that reveals the stream. If you XOR the plain text and the ciphertext, you get the bit stream. So this has to be used very carefully. It's very fast, very lightweight, very secure. We've all been happily using it for 12 years. And stream ciphers for even longer. As long as your source of the pseudo-random data is good, you're okay. Now, the problem is that we need to use a static key. That is, the key needs to be agreed upon by the endpoints and not change. But the danger with a stream cipher is ever reusing the same stream. That's the problem. You must provide a mechanism from ever allowing the same pseudo-random stream to be reused against the plain text, because if you do that, turns out it's trivial to crack it. So to solve that problem, that is not needing every packet to have its own key, but have long-lived keys, they introduced the notion of, and this is something we've talked about in the past, an initialization vector, an IV. And the concept there is that it can be known, but it must never be duplicated. So the idea is that when you're starting to encrypt a packet, you increment this nonce, which can just be a counter, and that's the initialization vector. It mixes in with the key to produce a unique pseudo-random bitstream for that packet. The other side has a synchronized nonce, and it's got the same key. So it's able to increment the nonce packet by packet and reconstruct the same pseudo-random bitstream to get the data to decrypt the data by re-XORing it against the same pseudo-random bitstream, and out comes the plain text. Okay, so now that means never repeating the bitstream used to XOR the plain text is crucial. It turns out, not surprisingly, that's not guaranteed. What these researchers, two guys from Belgium, figured out was there was a way with a lot of preconditions to force a reuse of the nonce, which, as I said, is absolutely disallowed. So when a client, meaning iOS or iPad or Android device or a Mac or a PC, that is anything that's not an access point, that is anything that wants to connect to an access point, that's the client, also known in the terminology as the supplicant, as opposed to the authenticator. When the client wants to connect to a Wi-Fi access point, it sends an authentication request. The access point sends an authentication response. Then the client, that is an authentication response back to the client. The client sends an association request, and the access point sends an association response. So those are that's the first back and forth. Then that sort of just gets things rolling between the two. That establishes their agreement to then negotiate secrets. So that is just authentication and association to sort of establish the dialogue between them, but no secrets yet. So then they do what's known as the four-way handshake. That is, after those first, then they do the four-way handshake. The access point sends the first of the four messages to the client containing its nonce, which is – so it makes up a random value, sends it to the client. The client – then uses its own nonce with the one it received from the access point to derive what's called the PTK, which is one of the keys used for Wi-Fi. And then it sends its nonce back to the access point. That's the second of the four packets in the four-way handshake. Now the access point has the nonce it sent and the nonce it received, so it's able to derive the identical PTK key. So now both sides, having exchanged nonces, have this PTK key. After two packets, the first one from the authenticator, from the access point, the second one from the client. Now the access point sends message number three of the four, containing an additional key, and the client finally sends the fourth packet of this four-way handshake back to the authenticator. And so that's the four-way handshake. That's the way things normally go. What these guys discovered essentially was there had been a mistake made from the beginning, from the first moment that this technology was designed, which arises if the client's fourth packet, that fourth phase of the handshake, it sending back essentially a confirmation, if that never arrives, the access point will resend message three, thinking that, you know, not knowing whether message four got lost or dropped or collided with or whatever in transit, not knowing that the client didn't get message three, all the access point knows is that it didn't get message four, which is the result of the client receiving message three. So it resends three. It turns out that the protocol has an error such that when any client receives message three, it resets the nonce. And that's the vulnerability. As I said, we cannot ever allow any encrypted data to be re-encrypted under the same bitstream. Well, the keys are not going to change. We're relying on the nonces to change. So if we re-zero the nonce, we're going to reuse the same bitstream, and that collapses our security. So this, it turns out, is difficult to implement in practice. Okay, so assuming that you don't have – no one assumes we have an evil access point, because after all, it's the access point that you're trying to talk to. There's no reason to have an evil access point that like is maliciously resending that third message in order to cause the client to reset its nonce, because the access point knows what the client's saying anyway. So one of the things that was not well covered is this requires a man in the middle. That's one of the first things that has to happen. This is a man in the middle attack, meaning that a third party has to somehow arrange to intercept the communications between the access point and the client. Well, in a wireless mode with radio, that's not super difficult, except that it's a little complicated because the MAC address of both of the nodes, both of these endpoints, is mixed in to the crypto material. So a man in the middle can't have a different MAC address if it's pretending to be the access point for the client, or none of the crypto will work. It'll all break. So the man in the middle has to have the same MAC address, except you can't have two of the same MAC addresses on the same Ethernet. And remember that Wi-Fi is just a version of Ethernet. So the way these guys very cleverly solve the problem is they run their attacking man-in-the-middle radio on a different channel with the same MAC address as the access point. That way the crypto doesn't break and there's no inter-MAC collision because they're deliberately on different radio channels. So now this rather sophisticated man in the middle has to be within radio range of everybody and has to be quick on the draw, able to intercept, and essentially it's impersonating the access point to the client and it's impersonating the client to the access point. And it uses its man in the middle position to maliciously resend that third message to the client in order to force the client to reset its nonce because of a protocol documentation error that's always been there. And just that crashes the rest of the link security. Now, wow. It's true. Yes, yes. So several things. First of all, notice that all of this is on the client side. That's why I said it's not technically necessary for any of us to worry about our access points. It's a malicious access point in the middle that is the problem, leveraging the client's logic on the client side. So that's really what needs to get fixed. It'll be good for us to update our access points, because access points can behave as clients if they're connecting to another access point. That is, when you want to connect like a mesh, if you have any kind of a mesh system, per the Wi-Fi protocol, somebody is the access point, somebody is the client. Or in the Wi-Fi terminology, one is the authenticator, the other is the supplicant. So it's the supplicant side, the client side, where the vulnerability exists. So it'll be good for us to update our firmware, but it's not crucial. What's crucial is that the things that connect to the access points, the clients, that's what needs to get updated.